plate a potential nugget.
In terms of how to make this shift, Stephen, let's talk about that. Clearly, the need for trust and inspire is sort of glaring. It's hard to not understand that it's a need of the times. Having built a muscle memory in a certain way, what's your advice for leaders to start moving the paradigm from command and control or enlightened command and control to trust and inspire? What are some of the baby steps they can take to move in that direction?
I think the first step we can take is to really kind of become self-aware of our fundamental beliefs, of our paradigm. And it's hard to, because, you know, almost by definition, the paradigm is the lens through which you view the world. So even becoming aware that we all wear a lens, we're all looking through a lens, we're looking through a paradigm, and to maybe challenge it, to maybe question the assumptions that we're based upon about how we view people, how we view leadership. And so that's where I try to map out these five fundamental beliefs of a trust-inspired leader, because I believe that those beliefs are more accurate, more complete, more relevant paradigm of leadership and of people. And so challenging yourself on those and asking some questions. And so here's a way of doing it. Mm-hmm. So the very first fundamental belief, this is how you view people, is this, that I believe that people have greatness inside of them. So if I buy that belief, my job as a leader is to unleash their potential, not control them. Now, someone might hear that and say, okay, yeah, I believe that. So here's a way of maybe really challenging ourselves of how deeply we believe it. It's to ask this question. Okay, I believe that people have greatness inside of them. Ask this. How would those who I lead and serve describe me in terms of seeing and unleashing their greatness? Mm. In other words, it's not me saying, I believe people have greatness. It's how would those I lead describe me in terms of seeing and unleashing their potential, seeing and unleashing their talent? Mm. And you have to be really self-reflective because, you know, would they say the same thing that you might think, which is, I see the greatness? Too often we have a more of a limited paradigm versus an expansive paradigm on this. And we might say, well, the high potentials have greatness inside of them. You know, see, even our systems and structures are all designed with a scarcity, command and control mindset. High potentials have greatness. So you got to develop them, but everyone else, you got to make sure you contain them, control them. And people have greatness. I didn't say some people. I said people have greatness inside of them.
And you spoke about five beliefs. This is one of them. Could you sort of quickly throw the light on these? Yeah. Some of the others?
I'll quickly state them, because the reason this is important is that these beliefs collectively, when you put all five together, they comprise a more accurate paradigm, a better map of people and of leadership than a command and control paradigm, fundamental beliefs that a command and control person would have. So here's where they are. I'll go fast. First, I believe people have greatness inside of them. So my job as a leader is to unleash their potential, not control them. Second, I believe that people are whole people, meaning body, heart, mind, spirit. They're a whole person. So my job as a leader is to inspire, not merely motivate. Now, if people were just economic beings, motivation would be sufficient. If all they were was a body, you know, then motivation would be enough. Just pay them. But they also have a heart. So they want to care and belong. They have a mind. They want to develop and grow. You talk about growth and play to potential. They want to grow, develop, and contribute. And they have a spirit. They want to matter, make a difference, have impact. So inspiring taps into a better way of moving them than just motivating. So that was commentary around the belief. I'm sorry. I'll try to stay with just the beliefs without the commentary.
This is helpful. Yeah.
So I'll just repeat that second one. I believe that people are whole people. So my job as a leader is to inspire, not merely motivate. Now I shift from people to leadership. Third, I believe that there is enough for everyone. That's an abundance mentality. So my job as a leader is to put caring above competing. Fourth, I believe that leadership is stewardship. See, it's about responsibility, not rights. So my job as a leader is to put service above self-interest. Finally, fifth, I believe that enduring influence is created from the inside out. So my job as a leader is to go first. Someone needs to go first. Leaders go first. If you take those five fundamental beliefs collectively, it's a more accurate, more complete, more relevant paradigm of people and of leadership. And I could kind of go through a command and control paradigm of people and leadership, and it would be high potentials have greatness inside of them, but not everyone. And people really are just economic beings. You just pay them well, you know, so you motivate, not inspire. And there's scarcity, not abundance. And, you know, hey, I'm the leader, I'm the boss. So it's rights, not responsibilities. And we got to work on systems and structures to make the change, not I go first. I look in the mirror. I go first. So is it just a more expansive, more accurate paradigm of people and of leadership? And the reason it's important, Deepak, is until the paradigm shifts, we really won't follow with the behaviors. And it will just be an enlightened command and control. A better version. Here's a way of thinking about it. Authoritarian command and control operates on the premise of fear. That's what I can do to you. That's the old model. Most have moved away from that. Enlightened command and control operates on the premise of fairness and transactional exchange. Much better. What I can do for you. Trust and inspire operates on the premise of inspiration and partnership. It's what I can do with you. So authoritarian and enlightened command and control is still motivation. Trust and inspire is inspiration. What I can do with you. And partnering, different in kind.
And you, in the book, you, I loved one of the phrases you use. I think you say this in the context of stewardship. You say that you rent your title, but you own your character. I love the pithiness of that phrase. Can you sort of expand on that for us?
Yes. Well, and it came from, I heard it from Thasunda Brown Duckett when she became the CEO of TIAA, Big Financial Services Organization. And she became the CEO. And, you know, new title, new role, and that's kind of position, right? Title, I got this new title, I'm the CEO. And her whole thing is, no, look, titles come and go. I rent my title. That will change. But I own my character. This is who I am. And the whole idea is that, you know, it's not just enough to have formal authority. We want to have moral authority of who we are. And when you have, yeah, position matters, but what really matters is influence. And if you have to rely upon your position, upon your title, not upon your character and your credibility and your influence, then you're, again, you're in a command and control model, not a trust inspired model. You're using your position to get things done. And so you're talking about rights, not responsibilities. I believe that leadership demands stewardship. It's responsibilities that we have as a leader. And in Trust Inspire, I talk about there's three of them. Three key stewardships we have to model, to trust, to inspire that we have as leaders for those that we lead, those that we serve. These are responsibilities, not rights. And we do it through influence, not through position. And I could come back to Satya Nadella, beautifully modeling. You know, he modeled, he trusted, he inspired and unleashed the potential of Microsoft by first unleashing the potential of his people.
I want to share my experience in the context of some work I've been doing with an organization called Antarang Foundation. Antarang Foundation works with young adults in low-income communities and helps unlock their potential by giving them aspiration, teaching them life skills, and by providing clarity to them on the path that would make most sense for them. However, when I look at the world of opportunity and the manner in which the potential employers look at these young adults, I find that it's often in the frame of enlightened command and control. They're often saying, "What can I extract from this person at this rate?" However, I truly, truly believe that while the world of opportunity might be skewed, there are some haves and some have-nots, the world of potential is uniformly distributed. There's no reason to believe that a bright kid in the slums of Dharavi is not as capable as somebody going to a posh school in Mumbai. While I may not have an answer to how to do this at scale, I must say that empirically speaking, the two people who edit this podcast, Akash Diore and Arman Bansol, are both alumni at Antarang Foundation. One of them was a ticket seller at a metro station in Mumbai. The other was a barista at Starbucks. Today, they handle the social media marketing and audio editing respectively. And I personally learn so much each day working with them. Back to what Stephen says, my limited point here is that very often when it comes to our children, we are willing to think like a gardener. But when it comes to others around us, whether it's the helpers that come to us, the staff in the communities we live in, or some of the others, we very quickly move to the mindset of a machinist. It's worth reflecting on whether we can bring a gardening mindset to some of those conversations too. Not easy, but at least worth trying somewhere.